the beauty of basketball and people come from all different backgrounds and walks of life, that your job now is to blend those personalities.
Welcome to Hoop Nerds with Billy Kegler, presented by the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. We talk to coaches, athletes, and more to learn from their stories and apply learning lessons to improve each individual and stimulate growth for your program, team, staff, and self. Follow along as we explore success and failure en route to improving the game of basketball.
Before we jump in today, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. I've been associated with their products for a few years now, and I'm really impressed by their innovative and user-friendly shooting machines. They also are great people with tremendous customer service. It's no wonder why they have become the preferred choice among top programs around the country and world. I'm very grateful for their support of the show. Make sure to check them out at drdishbasketball.com and at Dr. Dish B-Ball on social media. Be sure to mention WBCA when ordering your next Dr. Dish to save an extra $300 off any commercial purchase. Coach Duffy, welcome to the Hoop Nerds podcast.
Hi, great to be here. Thanks for having me, Billy.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm excited to dive in a little bit. So let's go back in time and let's begin by telling me about the first time that you did something in the coaching world and a story that sticks with you from it.
Well, I had a just really awesome transition going from player to coach. I had the opportunity to play professionally for a couple years and then ultimately knew I wanted to coach. And my first job was out at St. John's University in the Big East as well. And I just remember it was just a funny story. It was my first scout. So obviously you have pressure as an assistant coach to make sure you know the ins and the outs of the other team and making sure you know the sets to teach your team in practice and your head coach is looking at you. But the unique part was I was also pretty young and still playing and practicing with the team. So I'll never forget, you know, getting thrown into practice and, you know, going up and down full court, being out of breath and bam, the segment ended. And now it was my turn to be on the court for the first time teaching a scout. And, you know, I'm trying to look at my notes and remember what the heck I'm even talking about. And while trying to do it while catching my breath, and the team's looking at me like, wow, here's this little rookie coach trying to do it all. And you kind of, you know, fast forward this many years later as a head coach and all the things on your plate. And back then, you know, being able to play and practice and remember the scout seemed like a daunting task and probably embarrassing that first time. But I feel like those small moments and little moments when you're learning how to be a coach and learning the game really sets you up for down the road.
Were you able to, in the future, then take that experience and then multitask and while you were playing on the court in practice, prepare yourself mentally for the next step in practice so you didn't have to then rush your transition?
Absolutely. It's like being a point guard, right? Where you have to be, you know, three steps ahead and thinking that next play mentality. And I think being able to learn that as a not only as a player, but then moving into the coaching ranks, just to think of, you know, what's ahead, being prepared. I think the art of preparation can never be stressed enough with young coaches coming up, trying to learn the game, like just how much time and effort it goes into a simple thing like, you know, putting together a scout or being prepared when your name is called. And I think those little moments that I mentioned before are the ones that lay the foundation of, you know, you building your confidence as a coach and learning how to use your voice when the whole gym's watching you and, you know, you want to do a great job, whatever your role is. And I think that's another, I think, you know, just tip that I always remember, no matter what duty you have, no matter what role is assigned to you, you know, really doing it in a first class, you know, high level, no matter how big or small the task is.
You mentioned in there playing professionally. So I'm curious what the biggest obstacle you faced transitioning out of playing professionally into coaching. So receiving instruction and then transitioning to giving the instruction.
It was very different. I think one of the things when you're a pro, you're so driven and focused on yourself to make it in the WNBA or overseas. And as much as you know the game, it completely changes when you move to that other side. And it's not about you anymore. And it's all about those young women in your locker room. And it's about serving your head coach. And you're just looking at the game a whole lot different. And I think as a player, ultimately your favorite part is game day and you know, putting on that uniform and so much about when you move to the coaching side is the teaching and the mentoring and, you know, really accepting that you're going to have a team of people that are probably very different than you. And I think that's the challenge when you got the beauty of basketball and people come from all different backgrounds and walks of life, that your job now is to blend those personalities and give them experiences and opportunities that they probably never thought they had. And then as a young coach, you're kind of navigating your philosophies and opinions and trying to keep up with, you know, the philosophies and culture of the school you're at. And I think there's no better way than being thrown to the fire and learning as you go. But there's such a responsibility as a coach and to be able to take all those tasks and, you know, really protect the game and the women who are playing it in our case. And it's just, it's an awesome feeling to be in the business and the profession.
So you kind of walked me into this here with the navigating your philosophy as a young coach. So I'm curious, a philosophy or a theory that you had as a younger coach that eventually you changed your mind about because you were presented new information or you learned something new.
I just remember a little bit to go one step backwards is just as a player, I remember learning the game, the offensive side of the ball through a lot of plays and sets. And, you know, these are the plays you got to memorize and, you know, you're going to come off the ball screen and you're going to come off the staggered screen. And towards the end of my career as a pro, I really started to learn how to play the game, right? And make reads and decisions. And as much as I was doing that as a young player, I didn't really understand the why of it all. And then when I move into coaching, what I found out with my philosophy, it wasn't about thinking of plays and drills. It was about teaching our players how to play the game and how to move without the basketball and how to change your pace and, you know, how to be in the right spot defensively. So it was less about let's run this type of offense or let's play this type of man-to-man defense. And it was about my evolution of learning the game at a little bit of the next level. And I don't think I really totally understood that until I got into coaching and learned from my bosses and other assistant coaches around me and just started looking at the game a little bit differently. And then taking that mindset of learning how to play and reads, and then that's how you figure out what to work on in practice and how to make your position players better or how to make your team better.
Talk to me about something that you do in your program that you think has the biggest positive impact for your players in their lives and their futures going forward.
I think the biggest, buzzword that all coaches and programs talk about is the culture of your team and your program. And I'm really a big believer that that is something you work on and stress and talk about and build every single day. And with culture, the evolution of it is you're going to take a step forward, you're going to take a step back, you're going to take two forward, one back. But what I've really enjoyed running my own program now is just taking those concepts of culture, right? And, you know, just continuing to spend the time with our players to build it. I think that can never be overemphasized enough, that it's not some magic potion or these, you know, big speeches you give out. It's one-on-one conversations with your players. It's group, you know, talks or going out to lunch with your seniors. It's asking your players' opinions. And I think that's a little bit of the difference when people talk about how things have changed over the years. I think even when I was coming up, you just listened to your coaches, you didn't question anything, and that was it, right? And now I think it's very much, I think the best teams still have a collaborative mindset and a collaborative way to discuss different topics. And that doesn't mean you always agree or disagree, but I just really like that part about the time spent with our players. And I think that's been really important to the success that we've had at Marquette. Just being able to build those connections and relationships and really bringing in players that want that piece of it.
So you alluded to it here that not everything is always sunshine and rainbows and you take their feedback and necessarily you don't always agree, right? So when there is a difference in opinion between someone you're receiving feedback from and yourself, how do you navigate that to find the common ground to move forward?
I think one of the most fun parts about coaching is being with your staff and the closed doors, and you're putting together a game plan, or you're talking about your depth chart, or, you know, a new play to run, and just the the dialogue that goes into that and the why. And sometimes those moments can get heated and, you know, people can be opinionated, but when you have that trust with your staff specifically, it's awesome. I mean, that's the best part about sharing ideas and thoughts. You know, one thing when you talk about, you know, player coach relationship, I think we really stress, at least here at Marquette, we want them to have a voice and we want our players to learn how to express their opinions and their voices. And if they believe a certain way, how to do that in a professional way and have, like we talk about that word preparation, have reasons why you feel that way. I don't love when just people start saying random things and just because it's on the, you know, tip of their tongue or it's in their head, you want them to really have some critical thinking of why, you know, they feel a certain way or have a certain opinion. And that's really fun to mentor and teach our young women as well to, when they go out into that real world, they've already had a lot of practice with us speaking in front of their team or speaking in front of the media and, you know, just understanding their audience. And I think that's a very rewarding part of this coaching world as well.
You have me down a rabbit hole here and I love it. So critical thinking, and I'm curious about how you teach them to critical think and give great answers. And obviously you just mentioned speaking in front of media, speaking in front of groups. Those are opportunities, but you have to prepare them, as you talked about, to do that. So I'm curious if there's exercises or activities that you do with your team to prepare them to be critical thinkers.
I think they're getting that a lot just with their curriculum in school, for sure. And then you throw in the basketball piece with us. And I just think, you know, I like asking them why. I like with not just myself, but our entire staff, showing them another way to think of things. I think sometimes when they come in, it's sometimes an opinion that their family has had or they grew up a certain way. So to be able to have that dialogue where that isn't the only way to think about something is really important. And then, you know, there's no right or wrong answer to a lot of topics you talk about. And I think we learned that probably within the last year more than anything else, that there's a lot of different ways people look at things, right or wrong. And even as you look into this world of social media, we're all in, you know, everybody's Twitter feed looks a little different, you know, based on what you believe in and how it's populated. So even just thinking about how those things evolve with our team is pretty fun to dive into. And seeing 18 to 22 year olds in my case kind of look at you and go, wow, I never thought about it that way. I know we're doing our job when you have those reactions. And, you know, to talk about the preparation part, I don't care what job you end up going into, or, you know, if you want to have a family someday, just the work it takes to be successful and the research and just the commitment to your craft and to your family and your friends, it all goes into the same, I think, like, you know, bucket of skill set that you need.
Sideline Interactive delivers digital and LED scoring tables and video boards that generate excitement in your gym and the ultimate game day experience for your players and fans. We provide you the blueprint and the game plan to generate $10,000 or more in sponsorship revenue every year. 95% of our schools generate enough advertising dollars during the first school year to pay for their purchase. Any school or college can qualify for no fee, no interest financing over two school years. We're ready and able to deliver your order to you within 3 to 4 weeks. The tables and boards can be used for any indoor sport, as well as watching game film, school assemblies, signing days, or any other event that is held in your gym. Visit sidelineinteractive.com or call 832-786-0302 to schedule a 15 to 30 minute live web demo to see our tables and boards in action and what these fantastic products can do for you. Or email sales@sidelineinteractive.com. A link to sidelineinteractive.com is in the show notes for today's episode.
As many listeners know, I spent over 6 years as a general manager at Just the Game Fieldhouse in Wisconsin Dells. I was able to spend time talking hoops with coaches like Tom Izzo, along with high school and youth coaches, in addition to meeting some basketball legends, including my childhood favorite, Sam Elke, who is in the WBCA Hall of Fame and High School Basketball Museum, located at Just the Game Fieldhouse, which is a must-visit for any true hoop nerd. They also play host to the WBCA All-Star Games and Coaches Clinic every year. Just the Game hosts over 70 basketball and volleyball tournaments annually and is a great place to play for teams of all ages and ability levels. You can't beat all Wisconsin Dells has to offer in your free time. The Fieldhouse also has two sister companies in Just the Game Impressions and Just the Game Live. Just the Game Impressions specializes in customized screen printing and embroidery and promotional products. They serve businesses, schools, sports teams, and more. Just the Game Live takes pride in providing affordable and simple live streaming solutions for venues or programs of all kinds. Inquire today for more information. For more info on everything Just the Game has to offer, check them out at justthegamefieldhouse.com. All right, so we're going to talk about cutting and passing. And oddly enough, right before we got on, I was watching Princeton play. And on the men's side, the Princeton offense, you know, a lot of cutting, a lot of passing, initiating their offense. So I'm curious, because of the way basketball being played or moving in the direction of a lot more dribbling, a lot more ball screens with passing and cutting, how do you work to make your players better at cutting and better at passing? Let's start there and then we'll dive out.
I'll start with the passing. I think it's obviously the most underrated skill that you can, you know, talk about with the game of basketball. Whatever offense you choose to run, whether it's a Princeton, whether it's a motion, whether it's a ball screen continuity, the ability to deliver the ball at the right time is everything. And one of the things that I think I know, moving from an assistant coach into a head coach and evolving as a teacher, was just the way we emphasize the different passes that will be in one singular game of basketball. It's amazing. If you take a step back and turn on a college game right now or an NBA game, and just watch the different types of passes that will be executed in a game. Use, for example, just a post-entry pass. Is it a wraparound? Is it a touch pass? Is it a, you know, one-handed pass? I mean, is it straight in right over your head? Just understanding angles and where defenses are. I talk to our team a lot about you have to change the trajectory of your pass. It can't just be, you know, a bullet chest pass that you learn in, you know, when you first start playing basketball. So getting them to understand those reads and the different passes you'll make, even if you're, for example, a transition team, the different passes you'll see that will happen in transition basketball, whether you kick it ahead, whether you move into a drag ball screen, whether you have some sort of other continuity. The way the ball moves has to be emphasized to your team, and making sure as a coach you're putting things in place with drill work and breakdown drills that are emphasizing that passing and that timing. And I think significantly for us here at Marquette, that has helped our offense with just the ability to execute and be confident with certain passes that happen. The other thing you look at is when you're playing against different defenses, is it a pressure defense, is it a pack line? You're going to be throwing all different types of passes within, you know, based on who you're playing. And I think looking at it from that angle is maybe a different angle to look at it to simplify it for your team to improve.
So you mentioned there breakdown drills with passing. And I was thinking about this as you talked about it. Depending on your opponent, do you have your set package of passes that you're working on, your breakdown drills, where you go ABC every time? Or do you specify it for your upcoming scouting reports, your opponent? So you work on strengths for you that you need to have dependent on your opponent. You know, like you talked about, a wraparound pass, depending on if they're forcing baseline, forcing middle. Is it the same or does it change?
I think we have, like you mentioned, an ABC formula. These are the type of passes you're going to, if you're running the Princeton offense, the type of pass you're going to make on a back cut. But what I think the next level is when you're watching film with your players or you're analyzing the efficiency of your offense and timing of your offense, you're then watching the body language and movement patterns of defenses, and then being able to show, you know, your team or set up a drill where, okay, this defender, you know, had no idea where the ball even was. They were staring at their man. You know, by the time they turned their head, that pass should already be there right over their ear, you know, for example, on a back cut. So that to me is the little nuances. Even if we, you know, use the example before of just your post-entry passes, really then taking that basic wraparound concept or maybe a touch pass against a three-quarter front in the post, you know, then you're taking, you know, those clips and showing your team, okay, you know, did you get your defender off you? How was your footwork? Where did you release it? You know, those small nuances that, you know, can help, you know, you gain an extra few possessions.
So one more area for passing, post entry. We talked about it a few times here. Do you believe in being able to lob the ball into the post? Or are you belief of straight entries? So what I mean by that is, you know, we can go top down from elbow to the block, lobbing it in, or do you believe it has to come straight in on an entry pass on a string?
I mean, I would say it's never a straight line entry pass. I think it's some sort of form of a wraparound, whether you're using your dribble to create an angle. I think it all depends on where the defense is. You know, we like to say our two passes into the post consistently are a wraparound or a little touch pass, because very rarely will a defender be straight on your back with, you know, no hand in a passing lane. You know, and then the other dynamic is if a team fronts the post, obviously being able to seal and have great footwork and just those passes over the top, taking a peek at the help side. So basic fundamentals like that. But I think those are the three main ones that we would say we talk about. But I'm really big when you also look at that, the balance of a passer as well. I think a lot of turnovers happen, not necessarily the pass you're making, but, you know, just how on balance you are with your footwork to be able to execute those.
Oh, I love that part. So let's talk about cutting then and timing of cutting. How do you teach the feel of cutting to your players?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think the big thing is, you know, the chemistry of your team, and that starts in the summer. I think that's playing 2-on-2. That's playing 3-on-3. That's cutting one side of the floor off. So you have a 3-on-3 game and you can't cross the midline. So whatever you're working on, say it's a ball screen action, say it's a, you know, down screen action that, you know, has some cutting movements. Even if you talk about the Princeton offense where you throw it, a lot of teams are throwing it to the, you know, pinch post, and then they're doing different movement patterns off it. So being able to make decisions and cuts and movements in short space and small space, I think is really important to learn how to cut. We've talked a lot about reading the body language of the defense, where they're leaning. That also helps with the ability to know what cut to do. Is it a face cut? Is it a back cut? Is it a small, simple cut just to set your man up to come off a ball screen? So those little things just take time and film study. And I think early on is when there's a balance as a coach to stop those actions in a 3-on-3 and talk about, okay, I would back cut on this, or, you know, your body language to come off the screen so we can deliver it a certain way. I think you have to stop and teach. But then part of, I think, becoming a good cutting team and reads is letting them play and giving them certain goals within a breakdown drill. Okay, you got to make, you know, 5 to 6 perfect passes off our cutting action. You know, I think letting them play through it and figure it out too, while you're changing some defensive concepts up to get them to read and react off of it, I think also helps you become a better team and create the chemistry you need to execute those passes when it's live.
So you have the luxury of managers, practice team, and I'm curious, do you use them in breakdowns? And you just said it, like giving a different look from the defensive scheme or setup in practice. But when you do breakdowns, do you rep one consistently, or do you tell your practice players or managers, hey, you can never have the same body language 2 times in a row, so they start to replicate that? How do you approach that?
I think a little bit of both. I think early on, you're going through a progression of maybe what cut you're going to be working on, right? Okay, we're going to get this cut every time. Defense is going to do that. So you're slowing it down of the way the defense is going to move, how you have to move, how you have to change your pace, et cetera. And then I think what gets kind of fun when you got a group of guy practice players, and I know that's hard for different listeners who are paying attention to this, especially with youth in middle school and high school. We got a lot more bodies sometimes at the college level, but what's really that I felt like we've got some really good feedback from our players is it's easy when you know this is happening. It's easy when you know this is where the help side's coming from. But what I think all players, regardless of girls, boys, men, women, is just working on that reactionary decision-making and movement patterns when the defense doesn't necessarily do what you think they're going to do. And I think we've spent time within, you know, the off season, and then even when we're now in practice and full go, we do a lot of things where you don't know what the defense is going to be doing. And you gotta kind of have to go on the fly, and you kind of let the offense know, hey, defense is going to be guarding, you know, ball screen or this cutting action 3 different ways. They're going to switch it. They're going to fight through. They're going to, you know, tag people off, whatever, you know, terminology or, you know, system you're working with. And then they have to in the flow of it, then figure out the right reads and the right passes. And it can absolutely look really ugly, you know, right off the bat, and still ugly through the rest of the year too. But I think that's where you can stop and teach and give them confidence. And then when they make a really good read or a really good cut off of a poor decision by a defender, that's when, you know, that confidence and swagger can come out.
Are you mentioned in their small-sided games, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, you're talking to someone who loves small-sided games. So I'm curious, do you keep that specifically for the off season, and then when you're in the season, you work 5-on-5? Or do you carry that over into implementing some theories or strategies in season with small-sided games as well?
We do it all year long. It doesn't matter. Like if I just close my eyes and say, when do you do it? It's summer, it's fall, it's in January. It's we do a lot of breakdown into then 5-on-5 games. And, you know, even there's segments that we'll do where, you know, you can't dribble. You got to, you know, do certain things like that that could fit maybe a specific team you're playing against, or you know, they're a pressure team and you're not going to have time to dribble. You got to move the ball before they trap you or whatever. So I think I'm a really big believer on keeping those little fundamental, small groups and short-sided things going throughout the whole season.
All right, Coach, I'm going to get you out of here on a fun question that I like to throw at our guests. So use your imagination a bit. If you could have one superhero power, what superhero power would that be? And what would you do with it?
I'll maybe name two. I would love to be able to slow down time. I don't know if that's a superhero power, but I feel like as a head coach, you're pulled in a lot of different ways. So I love to have the power to be like, okay, I need a little bit more time on this, and I need to get here quicker. Or can we just skip this part of, you know, the season or whatever it is. So I would say that would be interesting. And then I would love the power to just be a confidence giver and any opportunity that crossed my way. So if you were somebody that I saw or didn't see struggling, being able to put some fairy dust on you and make you confident in your abilities and your ability to defend and make shots. And I would love, that'd be like a major superpower to be able to do that. But I think it's so important, as we're all teachers and mentors and coaches to be able to breathe confidence into your players.
Well, I love that one. I think I just came up with the name for it, the Fear Fighter.
I like that. That's good.
There we go. We just came up with it. Coach Duffy, thank you for coming on Hoop Nerds Podcast, and best of luck this season.
Thank you. Appreciate it.